Industry, regulatory agencies, and other stakeholders have received the message that engaging patients in healthcare product development is meaningful and important. But acting on this message requires organizational cultures that place high priority and focus on patients. I am Alberto Grignolo, Deputy Editor of DIA's Global Forum. Today, I am speaking with Mary Stober-Murray, who is Associate Director, Diversity and Patient Engagement for Bristol-Myers Squibb Company. Mary is responsible for supporting global clinical development efforts by building relationships with advocacy organizations, patient communities, and provider communities to keep them informed, educated, and prepared to support clinical development of BMS compounds. Mary will also participate in the panel discussion on changing cultures to advance patient engagement during the DIA 2016 annual meeting in Philadelphia. Welcome, Mary, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
Let me start with the first question. Are there any specific patient populations or therapeutic areas whose voices seem underrepresented in medical product development?
So I think certainly there are, you know, what we've been talking about very recently, ethnic minority populations. There's certainly age, gender-related disparities, et cetera. But I think we also have to recognize that overall there's low participation in medical product development, regardless of the demographic characteristics or disease areas. And so I think we need to step back and kind of consider that. There is a real central dilemma in what industry is trying to get out of product development and what patients need to get out of it as well. So what I mean by that is in industry, when we're designing a research program, you know, we're thinking about anonymized data. We design a research question and we're comfortable collecting the answers over time. And for us, a study has a discrete beginning, middle, and end. But if you flip that to the other side of the coin, you know, there's the person who's participating. And for them, this is not at all their experience. It's not an anonymous experience. It's a deeply intimate and personal experience. You're taking tissue, you're taking blood, you're taking time from someone's life, a body and their life. As a patient, right, if I'm considering this, I want my questions answered before I can even feel comfortable giving my consent. What is it I'm putting in my body? What will I have to endure and for how long? Can I keep working? Will my insurance cover it or will participating somehow threaten my insurance coverage? Who's going to care for my children? So I want answers to these questions before I can even think about participating. This has to fit into my life somehow. And depending on where I am in my disease, what type of disease it is, what the study is offering, is it a first line, is it a second line or third line, am I out of other options? All of those questions I need to have answered before I can consent to participate. And finally, it doesn't have a beginning, middle, and an end for me. Once a development activity has entered my life, once a clinical trial has entered my life, it is always there for me, for my family members. We will always have questions. You know, if I develop a secondary cancer, for example, is this because of something that happened during the clinical trial? Or if I've benefited, if I've stayed healthy, you know, is that because of the clinical trial, you know, or something else? So I think we have to recognize the central dilemma that exists for all of us universally, and then we can go in and say, okay, what about specific minority, you know, participation or age groups or gender? Which of these needs are really particularly important for these people in these populations to be able to participate?
Your comments suggest, correct me if I'm wrong, that this central dilemma perhaps has not received sufficient sensitivity from industry when designing clinical trials. Would that be correct or not correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think we tend to look at things in isolation, right? We look at clinical development as a part of an overall linear process leading to, you know, submission of a data package, you know, for the registrational, you know, trial, and to ultimate, you know, hopefully approval and availability on the market. And we look at it as a very, very, you know, linear thing. And I think, yeah, it is hard to, and so we look at it as professional, and we sometimes need a reminder that we're people that are developing these drugs, but we're also people who are subjecting ourselves to these treatments or the clinical trial procedures, whatever it is, and that has to fit into our overall hierarchy of needs, you know, for lack of a better word. So I do think we forget that because we get so focused on the deliverables associated with clinical development, which are demanding.
So how could companies like BMS or organizations like DIA do better in identifying and amplifying these specific concerns and voices of patients, as you've described them?
So I think one of the things that we're doing at BMS and other companies as well is, first of all, we do have to, we understand our side of the coin. We do have to recognize the dilemma from the patient's point of view. And so we have to set up ways. We have to set up forums or procedures in our clinical development that allows us to listen to the patients, to the people with this disease, to their caregivers and other people that are important to them, and try to provide resources in a way that will address these needs so that participating in a development activity like a clinical trial really is beneficial for them, that the person comes to the conclusion that this may be right for me, this may be beneficial for me. So we have, just as an example, we, when our group started 4 years ago, the very first thing we did was, you know, it's just an internal series, but it's called Voice of the Patient, and we were starting to bring patients in to talk about this experience. And I think there are many other companies that do something very similar. But over time, we've really evolved this approach quite a bit, and now we're in a mode of kind of co-creating content with patients that goes up on our clinical trials portal. Like right now, we've got a series of videos featuring young adults with cancer who've been in clinical trials, not necessarily our clinical trials, but just sharing their experience, their rationale for participating in a clinical trial. So again, young adults are an underrepresented population, but this is a co-created content. We created it with an advocacy group called Stupid Cancer, but these are individual patients sharing their individual stories. And the hope is that that type of peer support is something that will be helpful to other young adults or really anyone of any age when they might consider a clinical trial as well.
In addition, do you or does your organization engage patients actually in the design of clinical protocols?
Yes. So we have another initiative. So we do a number of things. Number one, we might just engage advocates or individual patients in specific design questions, if we have them. But when we've got like a disease area that's new to BMS where we don't have a lot of internal expertise, we've started a program called the Patient Engagement Network, and that's where we set up kind of I don't even want to call it a committee. That's not exactly the right word, but we set up a group that has advocacy represented, it has individual patients represented, it has a caregiver, caregivers represented, and it also has site staff. So study coordinators also represented, and that group stays intact from the very beginning of our considerations about how to develop a research program for a particular disease area, all the way through the development of individual protocols that might be a part of that program. So that's something that we started over the past year or so, and it's really captured the imagination of our whole organization in a way that makes it easier for people to see the value that early patient insights can bring to the development program.
Very interesting, and this moves me to ask perhaps a bit of a controversial question, and that is, do you envision a day when a protocol would not be considered final until a patient advocacy group of relevance has actually signed off on it?
I don't know what's the most controversial part of your question.
Well, specifically, would a company not start a study until the appropriate relevant patient advocacy group has basically approved the protocol from their point of view, from the patient's point of view?
So definitely we want to have patient input represented, and I don't know that input necessarily needs to be from an advocacy group. There are some diseases that we study that, again, we're learning that might not have a patient community. Like, for example, if we were studying, you know, hypertension, there's no advocacy group actually, you know, for people with hypertension. You might reach them through other communities or other related conditions that they might have. But I think one lesson we've learned is that not every disease state has a corresponding advocacy group. So, but it doesn't mean that there aren't people that are sick with that condition and their input and experience needs to be considered and valued. So, yes, I do foresee a day where And we're already seeing it where leadership says, when did you gather? You know, what do patients think of this? How did you gather patient input, you know, to help validate your design thought? But like an official sign-off or, you know, even identifying who would be responsible for that sign-off, that's a little bit of a different question. I don't know. I don't know how that works out organizationally. But definitely that idea of having the validation from a patient point of view, I could see that. And we're already seeing that.
Okay, so as I understand it, this is kind of a middle ground where company leadership would require that the company have solicited and heard the patient's voice when designing the protocol, and that there is some documentation that the company has obtained that input from the patients, whatever the
right
or the appropriate patient.
Right, that we've tried to validate our assumptions along the way, and adjust it accordingly when we can. And if we haven't, if patients, you know, we might collect, you know, 20 different insights and we incorporate 10. Well, we would justify, you know, we'd be able to document how we incorporated those 10, but also explain what about the other 10? You know, are those coming at a later time, or is there some other reason that we can't incorporate that particular insight into the program?
It seems that you really are changing the culture of clinical research. So I wanted to ask you, what lessons have these efforts taught you over time? You've alluded to some, but perhaps there are other lessons that you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, again, I always think of things at a very high level. So I think one lesson is that, you know, just coming to a recognition that there is no single culture. There's no single drug development culture. There are so many cultures intertwined. There's kind of the prevailing culture of the scientific community. There's the regulatory and business climate. There's every individual company's, you know, corporate culture. There's a culture of healthcare, right? The relationship between healthcare providers and people who are sick. There's a culture around advocacy. You know, is it socially acceptable to advocate for yourself and for others? You know, there are so many cultures. And I think that, you know, we're also in the 21st century. And so I think we have to look at overall trends, you know, again, step outside of healthcare specifically and say, well, what is the 21st century turning out to look like culturally? And I think what we're seeing is a more collaborative culture, a more networked society, sort of sharing principles. And so some of the consequences I can see for that in drug development means that there is going to be an increasingly greater demand for openness, for transparency, for access to resources. And so that puts us now in this very interesting time of trying to understand what is it that we have as resources, what do our resources bring to the table, and then how do we go about and identify who our potential partners in this effort might be, who's going to be the right, how do we build a collaborative community around drug development? Because you can have two great organizations, it doesn't mean they're going to work well together. So how do we identify who our right partners are going to be so that we are able to form and maintain a collaboration that essentially we can effectively bring good medicines to patients? So that, for me, that's the big lesson, is trying to understand all of these different cultures and the role they play in the 21st century and the consequences for drug development.
It has been reported, and I think you've alluded to this in your earlier answers, that in the United States, at least, the rate of patients that could participate in clinical trials is rather low. Do these efforts to include the patient voice in protocol design and execution, could they lead to a higher rate of participation of patients in clinical trials? Could this be seen as self-serving for the industry, or could it be seen as really beneficial for patient communities that need more help in terms of new medicines and could help by participating in clinical trials?
So yes, I think it can be perceived both ways, right? I think the danger, we know there's a lack of trust, right? And that's not a secret. You know, there's data to show that people don't trust pharmaceutical companies. And so I think there is a very real possibility that what we do gets perceived as self-serving. But at the same time, participation in research is what's going to bring medicines to market that will benefit people. So both of those things are true. And I think,
is it possible to navigate through this channel such that everyone will benefit, including and importantly patients?
Yeah, I think openness is the key there. I think transparency, that's what people are asking for. What we hear, right? Patients are asking to be recognized for their contributions to research. And I think that, and then they want to be recognized for the contributions to research. And they also, one of the fears we get is that people say, we participated in your research. We gave you, our experience with our disease. We shared all of this willingly. And then your drug came to market and we couldn't get it. That's the fear, right, that people have. They'll somehow be shut out when it actually gets to market. And so that is, that's something we have to work together to solve. I don't know the answer right now, to that, but that is a huge trust issue.
It is one of the challenging questions of our times, for sure. There seems to be broad agreement that engaging patients in medical product development is not only good business, but it's also the right thing to do. So the why is clear and agreed. So in the end, what are the challenges that must be overcome and how we do this better? You've already mentioned several, but I was wondering if you had any closing thoughts on how do we actually get to the next level.
Yeah, so now it's my turn to be controversial. So because I think you probably do have universal agreement that it is the right thing to do, right? We're all people and we all get sick and we all want medicines to be there for us, to help us when we get sick. So I think we do have universal agreement there. But I think actually one of the challenges that we have is demonstrating that patient participation in this way is good business. That's something we still need to show. We're still challenged to show and to demonstrate that patient insights do have a measurable positive impact on business as well as on patient care. And so when we're thinking about our collaborations with patients, with all of our partners, we have to think about how do we design this collaboration in a way that will allow us to demonstrate the impact with reliable and kind of universally accepted metrics. We have to approach this in a way that we're really able to measure the value of that collaboration in terms of bringing the compound further along and supporting not just the patient care, but the business objectives as well. It's hard to, I'm trying to think of an example. So sort of the typical way, I think we work in industry and drug development is we sort of work our way backwards. We pick a point in time and say, okay, this is the point in time where we want to file. So then we need to have data at this point. That means we need to enroll so many patients by this point and so on. And then we sort of start planning in the design. But that overall time frame, might be several years. And so lots of variables, important variables, can change in that time frame. And so I think our challenge is to be able to show that by incorporating patient insights from the outset, that that's going to measurably reduce complexity without sacrificing the quality or the time to market of the medicine.
In effect, I believe you're saying that a business case needs to be made and has yet to be made, that including patient participation in the design of healthcare product development is actually going to be a strong business case and will benefit the business. But that case hasn't been made yet. Is that your point?
I think we all want it to be true. But we haven't as an industry been able to show that it worked, right? That it matters and that it works from a business point of view. And it might be changing, again, part of the business culture change might be what are the components of return on investment that we're looking for? We might have to take another look at that.
Are you aware of any efforts underway at this time in that direction, in the direction of a business case?
Well, I think individual companies are working on it in their own ways, but I guess what I think we need is a more universally appreciated business case, and that's something that we could probably look to maybe groups like DIA, but also like the industry consortia, like Transcelerate or something like that, to help us produce those metrics so that it's not every individual company kind of doing their own thing, but there's a universally accepted set of principles that we can use to demonstrate the contributions, the value of the contributions.
Understood. Our time has come to a close. Mary, I want to thank you for all your insights and wonderful answers. thank you for your time today, and thank you for all of the work that you do on behalf of patients. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.